I know a lot of different people say, you know, only 5 units and over, only 16 units and over. Some people are very, I'll buy a duplex tomorrow if it makes me money. I'll buy a single family home tomorrow if it makes us money. I'll buy a 20-plex. So it's more or less looking at what is the deal doing? What is the cash flow? How much effort do we have to put into it? You know, time versus effort versus money. And what's the team's bandwidth as of right now?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Mel and Dave Dupuy are the real estate couple who specialize in creative financing. They have over 20 years of combined experience, 240 units purchased with no money and no joint venture programs, and they currently have over 1,700 students in their mentorship program. Mel and Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having us. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. The pleasure is mine. There are three questions I ask every guest, or in this case, guests that come on the show. And I'll let one of you tackle this. Where did you guys start? Where are you now? And how did you get there? And you have to answer it in 90 seconds or less.
Okay, perfect. I'll get started. So Dave and I were a married couple. I had two properties when I met Dave. He had the one. We slowly started buying properties, hit the common roadblock of running out of money. So then we got into real estate, into creative financing, and that was a game changer for us. That's when we bought 12 properties in less than 12 months. That was 56 units. And now we're applying the same strategies of no JVs, no money, none of our own money in 5 countries. Boom, 90 seconds or less.
Boom, 90 seconds or less. I love it. When you guys decided to scale your business, was real estate the only thing you were doing, or did you have your hands in a job? What did that look like?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was a full-time firefighter. Mel worked at our local college. So this was a side hustle that became the main thing, right? Became the bread and butter, right?
Right. Okay, cool. I love it. And I'm assuming that now real estate is your full-time gig.
Exactly. Yeah, we're both able to leave the 9-to-5 job, the golden handcuffs.
Yeah, our 30s. Yeah, we're proud to say that.
That's awesome. Good for you guys. Okay, so you ran out of your own money and you said, all right, I got to go out and figure out a new way to do this. What year was that?
Late 2016. Okay. I think we had 6 properties. Yes, red, rich dad, poor dad, and went, what have we been doing wrong this entire time? And, light bulb moment, obviously a lot of people have that same moment.
And then got educated on creative financing and other people's money. And then 2017 is, like Mel said, that's when we had the 12 properties in 12 months.
Got it. Okay. 12 properties, 12 months. What do you, creative financing is like that thing that, you know, every investor dreams of, but very few are able to actually crack the code on how to make creative financing work, let alone doing it in 5 countries, which we'll get to here later on, I think, in the show. But how did you guys establish and or get your first property under, you know, creative financing, owner financing, whatever you did on that? Like what was the thing that you did? And then how did you develop a replicable system behind that?
I mean, part of it was mindset, right? Realizing that if all these other people can do it, I'm not the first one in the world that, you know, there has to be a way. So realizing the mindset first, and then making it a win-win as well. At first, we were all about, you know, we wanted to win, we wanted the best deal. But with creative financing, if I'm going to get into a deal, none of my own money, and I'm the sole owner of the property, I do want to make it a win-win with, let's say, the seller, for example, or somebody who's lending me money. So really making it a win-win. And once I showed them as well the exit strategy. So people want to make money, right? We all want to make money. So as long as they're able to find the right deal where you're able to do that, and you make money, they make money, but they also want to know how you're going to be paying them back. So we have a built-in exit strategy that we've always done, where it's numerical, it's logical. So we can actually review our numbers and know that we're able to pay that person back, because you're bang on, Sam. Not every deal is going to make financial sense where you can pay them back. So really knowing our exit strategy before we enter the deal.
Okay. I like what you said there. You said that you have the same exit strategy with every deal. It would seem like in creative financing, you'd be dealing with a lot of nuanced sellers that want this, or they want that, or they want, and you're trying to, I would think that you'd have to, I'm not a seller financing creative financing. Let me get that right. Creative financing person. It's just not something I've done a whole lot of, but it would seem like you'd have to craft that exit to each individual seller uniquely. And it sounds like that's not the case.
No, sorry. To clarify, absolutely. So every deal is, I just meant that every single deal needs to have an exit strategy on every deal. So on every deal, I have to have an exit strategy, but every deal absolutely looks different. The interest that I pay on every deal looks different. The term looks different. But essentially at the end of the day, what I'm looking for is that if I'm borrowing X amount of money and the terms is X amount, am I able to pay them back or not? And if I don't, then I need to go back and renegotiate or pass on that deal.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. So give me some of the things maybe that you see people commonly doing wrong when approaching creative financing structures.
Okay. So to compound what Mel said on their exit strategy, like this is the thing, people are just waiting for that market appreciation.
Right. They're just like, oh, the market's going to keep going up. And when we really dove into creative financing, we interviewed a lot of people who built a portfolio and unfortunately had gone belly up. And that's what we were noticing. They were banking on interest rates, and the market continued to go up. And we're like, well, that's out of your hands, right? Like no one can control that, as we're seeing now. You tell people that from 2020, 2021, they would have said, no, it's the sky's going to continue, right, going up. So
right.
That was the big thing, is making sure that we're not just dependent on those. And then also the thing with creative financing, I see people, they don't give themselves enough runway. They think, 6 months, and it's like, well, 6 months comes very, very quickly. Even 12 months is pretty short, like, right? So I see the runway and the exit, what they're building their exit strategy around.
Right. So you mentioned two things there. One, appreciation, rising interest rate. So it sounds like some of the things you're seeing is people are tying these deals to interest rates and saying, hey, we'll pay prime plus whatever it is on a floating rate. Is that kind of what one of the things you're mentioning there? Or am I missing something there?
No, you're bang on. Where, yeah, they're underwriting and they're going, okay, as of right now, the deal makes sense, like you said, kind of at this interest rate. And the second it bumps up, like we've seen, they're underwater and they're scrambling, and now they're looking at liquidating in a down market. So it's underwriting and stress testing your deals from day one with that worst case scenario. Like for example, we're buying a deal right now in Ohio with, is it 8 or 8.5% interest? And a deal in Orlando with 9% interest. And people are going, you're bonkers. And it's like, the deal still makes sense. We're still making hundreds of dollars per these are, one's a single family, one's a condo. We typically do multifamily. But they're making hundreds of dollars every single month cash flow, and the rates will go down at some point. So
the value of the property will go up over time. So it's, yeah, there's still ways to get into this.
Got it. Okay, cool. I know this is live, so either way, we're just going to do a couple quick housekeeping things. If I can get you guys to make sure you're really close to the mic, that'll be really helpful, because your audio is kind of going in and out on this end of it. So if everybody's listening, they'll hear you over here and then it's coming back in. So anyway, I love hearing you guys loud and clear. Thank you very much. Let's keep moving on that. You mentioned not enough time. How do you broach that length of time with the seller? And again, I know every deal is creatively structured, but I bet every seller is going to go, well, they want less time, and you say, I need more. How do you guys handle that?
So, okay, with the sellers, and I love that question, Sam, the runway that we're giving ourselves is going to be based on the value add property. So for example, that's what we like buying, is doing the typical BRRRR, right? Doing the value add, having specifically something that I like the low hanging fruit. We like the low hanging fruit. Have we done the big gut jobs and get the sledgehammers out and open up the kitchen? And yeah, we've done those, right? But are the ones that we love, the rinse and repeat ones, are the ones where we can go in, it's some flooring, it's some paint, it's some value add, $100 to $150 minimum rent increase per unit over a short period of time, right? So those are the ones we're looking for, and those are the ones that we kind of concentrate on. Now, do we differ from that? Yes, but that's kind of our, and when we build out the exit strategy and length of time, that's where we're talking with the seller. Okay. So let's say you have a 10-plex. Like right now, we're looking at a couple of buildings in Texas, and some are 20 units, some are 40, some are like, okay, for us to stabilize and reposition this asset, we're gonna need at least 3 years, right? So let's say that if I can pay you back sooner, awesome. But let's give ourselves enough runway. So that's kind of how we're looking at a deal by deal scenario.
Got it. No, I like that. And you mentioned 20 to 40 units. I mean, why are people in a position such that creative financing is really the only exit that they have as a seller? Like, how are you, what's happened to these assets such that this is now what their desired exit is?
So with these ones, actually, we're negotiating back and forth. They had bought it. They've done a lot of work to it. It's like halfway to the finish line. And they're like, you know what? We decided we're not these buy and hold type people. We're going to make some money, which good for them. They're going to make money. We're going to, you know, pick up the baton or carry the baton, whatever saying that is, and bring it past the finish line. So they're just realizing that, you know what, this isn't what we wanted to do. We'd rather hold notes instead of actually be, you know, investors. So in this particular one, that's what's going on.
Well, the thing is, everybody's at different stages. We've done that on some of our properties here that we're holding financing for, and we're putting those investments somewhere else as well now too. So it's realizing that not everybody has the same exact plan as you as an investor. Some people want out because they're tired of it. Some people just want to do something different. Some people may want to invest in a different area. And that's what we're doing as well. So we're doing owner financing on one end, but yet purchasing with owner financing on the other. So again, as long as it's a win-win, and why do we do this? Because it benefits us. It's always, that's always the answer. Why would anybody lend you money? It has to benefit them, and you have to show them your exit strategy.
When you define, it sounds like you have your buy box fairly well defined, but yet at the same time, you mentioned a single family residence, a condo in Florida, and then a 10 or a 20 plex somewhere in Texas. How do you define your buy box? And then how do you locate those sellers then that are willing to entertain a creative financing offer?
Okay, I love that you said that. And
it's true, because some people will say, well, you're doing short-term rentals in Costa Rica. And you're so I agree with you. Our buy box ends up becoming basically bandwidth and time versus effort versus money, right? Mm. So, and I've never been, and I know a lot of different people say, you know, only 5 units and over, only 16 units and over. Some people are very, I'll buy a duplex tomorrow if it makes me money. I'll buy a single family home tomorrow if it makes us money. I'll buy a 20-plex. So it's more or less looking at what is the deal doing? What is the cash flow? How much effort do we have to put into it? You know, time versus effort versus money. And what's the team's bandwidth as of right now, right? So
and that's going to change as well naturally, right? If the team is, we're working on a big new project and they're limited on time, then having something that's a bit more of a turnkey might be a better fit for right now, compared to if we have time and we have an amazing deal, a large multifamily, for example, then hey, let's go after that one. Like 1 year, for example, we bought a 50-plex and a 4-plex. Mm-hmm. And some people say, well, again, they're so, you know, fairly different sizes. Yes, but they both made financial sense. And that's something that really helped us succeed in the long run, is that we weren't only looking at one certain deal, where we're looking at a lot of deals, and whichever one is the right deal, again, depending on the cash flow, on the appreciation, future appreciation value as well that we'll see. And it's a return on our own time or our team's time as well.
Are there certain kind of clues that as you're looking at properties that you say, this might be a property that an owner would take a look at a creative financing solution on?
Every deal.
Okay, maybe. But to me, I'm going to be the devil's advocate here and say, like, to me, you're saying, hey, every deal. Okay, well, why don't we all just get on, you know, CoStar or something else and just start calling. I mean, I'd rather just beat myself with a brick than do that just blindly and hope to actually hit gold. So you got to have more to the sauce than just that.
Yeah, no. And when I say every deal, I mean that I'll always find a way, because even like if I find an amazing deal, even if the owner is not willing to hold financing, that's only one of the ways that we use with creative financing. There's promissory notes. You can use secured funds, like somebody's 401k. So yes, I will. If I find an amazing deal and I know I can have an exit strategy, I'll definitely speak with the owner and try to make it a win-win, because they may not be thinking about it and they might say, no, you're bang on. But if it's an amazing deal, then I'll find the capital elsewhere as well.
And something else that Sam,
when I'm looking at when we're looking at deals and we're analyzing in our cash flow analysis matrix, when the rents are very under market, that's when I'm like, okay, so they're asking this price. They might not be necessarily aware of what the market's doing. I'll look at the market rents. Okay, you're half of where the market rents are. You're only, you know, 60-70%. No one's going to qualify for this because the underwriting at the financial institution is just not going to make sense. So that's when I'm like, okay, I'll give you your price or close to it, but you're going to have to hold financing until I can actually reposition the asset. So those are the ones that when Mel and I find those ones, we love it, because we know probably the reason it's been sitting on the market is no one is qualified for it unless they're coming with a big down payment. So those are the ones that we get excited about.
Right. No, I think that's you hit a couple nails on the head there. We're in a deal right now where we were in the running for it, and then somebody else came in with some astronomical figure, and we're
I can't beat that. Yeah,
I can't beat that. And of course, what's happening right now? Well, they can't get financing on it.
Exactly.
Like, you can offer what you want all day long. So I think that's really interesting what you've mentioned right there. Let's move then, I guess, into one other part of this conversation. And I go, this is a short podcast, so there's so many things here I want to cover. But scaling across five different countries, I mean, that just in my mind it sounds incredibly challenging. Tell me, what are some of the secrets to the sauce that you guys have done to make that even a possibility?
Having an amazing team, right? Knowing that I don't know what I don't know, and that's okay. And really relying on the experts, right? Cross-border attorney, investor focus agents. So really building our team has been, we couldn't do it without them. There's just no way, because we are so far away, and often we've purchased properties sight unseen. However, we do our due diligence by a distance.
Wow. All right. So team is one part of it. What about the finances? I mean, that seems like that would get a little bit squirrely when you're going, okay, yeah, we're buying stuff in Ohio, we're buying stuff in Florida, and did I mention Costa Rica? And then what bank is open where? And then it sounds like an accounting nightmare. How have you guys solved that?
So yeah, the play in Costa Rica,
Mexico and Dominican is different than North America. So like, we love debt. We highly leverage debt in Canada and the US.
Good debt.
Yeah. Sure. No Ferraris, no Lambos, yeah. Right? Good debt. But in Costa Rica, Mexico, Dominican. So Mexico, Dominican Republic, as far as I know, we can't qualify, right, as a foreign national, and there's no financing. Okay. Mm. In Costa Rica, there are some mortgage brokers that can do it. They typically cap out around 60% loan to value. I have not used that, just to be honest with you. It's just a different place. So for example, it's more of a seller financing, right? Just like in Canada and the US, seller financing. Well, the most recent one, Costa Rica, the guy was from like Sweden or Switzerland. Never met him. It was all done through the agents, right? The down payment was a promissory note from back in Canada. So same structure deal, same difference. Now the thing to play there is still get the lift, still get the appreciation, and then sell, right? I don't like selling, but liquidate a few so that you have enough funds left over. Let's say you bought three and you sell two. Well, enough funds are left over to pay off completely the one left over. So a little bit of a different play, but still other people's money.
Yeah. Okay. That's really, and again, how do you even filter through all of the opportunities in real estate to find those two or three or those half a dozen, whatever you're working on in those various countries? Like how does that even happen?
Well, I mean, we do analyze a lot of deals. We look at a lot of deals. At this point, we have, you know, team members that help as well. But when we first started, we were just looking at a lot of deals. Sometimes just after a while, you get quick at it, right? You're able to look at a deal. You basically know, at least, like, I'm not even, like you said, don't waste my time on this one, right? So we definitely don't waste our time. If it's obvious that the deal doesn't make sense or I won't have my exit. I put inside my cash flow matrix, and it's very quick. It tells me if my pillars make sense or not, and tells me if I have an exit strategy. So that's kind of how we filter through
and
them.
And investor focus agents, right? In those areas, they'll feed us the deals too.
Mm, got it. Okay, very cool. Let's see all the things that we've covered here. We talked a little bit about some of the earmarks or hallmarks of creative financing, you know, missteps that people have made. We've talked, you guys have not done any joint ventures, no syndications. You've done everything up to this point, creative finance. Is that right?
Yes.
Except for the first six, it was traditional financing
Before we started, yeah.
before you figured out this kind of method. We've talked about how you guys find sellers. We talked a little bit about your team, not much. Maybe we'll come back to that. And then scaling across, you know, various countries. I think that's absolutely amazing. And again, maybe that is part of that conversation, is the team, because finding your agents, finding your mortgage brokers, finding the sellers. I mean, all of that takes team. And you said you've done this even without seeing some of these properties. I think it's really, really courageous. So tell me about the team that you guys have behind you there on the ground in Canada, or maybe elsewhere around the world. What's that been like to build that team inside of your own company?
Well, worldwide is definitely what how our team is built. So we actually have very few team members located locally. Pretty much all of them are in Canada, but in different areas across Canada. And I think we have like 7 or 8 different countries as part of our entire team. So we do have a very diversified team, and that allows us to really have a lot of connections, number one, a lot of introductions. And the thing is, like, I also know my lane. I know, you know, thinking like, oh my gosh, buying a property without seeing it yourself, how scary is that? But the reality is, I also know that I'm not the expert at foundation, and I'm not a licensed electrician. And I also know me walking through the building, I wouldn't know those kind of things anyhow. So I rather build a strong team where they can do their due diligence on my behalf, report back to me. Of course, I do my due diligence and videos and all those kind of things as well. That's how, I mean, even locally now, that's how we even do it locally as well, because I know what my strengths are and what my weaknesses are. And you know, it's into find the deals and managing the assets and the raising funds and all that comes with it. So our team now, yeah, it's a diversified team. Of course, lawyers, accountants, insurance company agents, mortgage brokers who's open to creative financing, and then the whole bookkeeping department, finance controller, CFO, you know, so social media, marketing. So we have a lot of different divisions, of course. So, but this also didn't happen overnight, right? Like when Dave and I first started, if you're a brand new investor, we started off with Dave and I, and I was, you know, we were the ones cleaning and doing the dump runs as well. So this is just something over time that we built as well.
I love that. I love that. And I love the kind of reference there. Cause yeah, doing the dump runs, boy, been there too many times where it's like, all right, well, there's all hands. It's just my hands on deck. Okay, great.
Gotta do what you gotta do, right?
Gotta do what you gotta do in the early days. I love that. Tell me one thing on the creative financing side. What is the worst deal you've done and or a deal you wish you hadn't done? And what did you learn from it?
Creative financing side. I think of your first deal, but it wasn't creative finance.
Maybe there's none.
I don't know. I don't really regret any. It's real estate. We've made a lot of mistakes.
Okay, give me one of those then.
You know what? It was probably the business structure.
Honestly, Sam, initially, everything was owned personally, and it had just completely, our total debt to income and our total debt service ratios were whacked. And it has nothing to do with the creative financing. It's just we had 18 properties in our own name, and we couldn't even buy a house for ourselves because the banks were like, you're out to lunch. Like, you got 18, like, your ratios are gone, right? So that was probably one of the biggest ones, was just the business structure was terrible.
That's not funny, but it is. 18 properties.
It's funny now.
Yeah, it's funny now, right? You got 18 properties and they're like, yeah, you can't buy your own house. Sorry. That's a brutal bit of news right there. Like, this doesn't make any sense at all. Man, this has been fantastic. Mel and Dave, thank you for taking the time to come on the show today. Certainly have learned so much from you guys. I love the way you're doing it and how you're doing it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, thank you so much, Sam. So we're all over social media, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Username is always Investor Mel Dave.
Investor Mel Dave. We'll make sure we include all of your social media handles there in the show notes. And thank you again for coming on today. I certainly appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.